Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps, the OG 90 Day Fiancé podcast, and place where I, Jody, your best friend and inner voice, break down all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, Lifetime to Bravo, even WeTV and Netflix, let's break down all the cringeworthy moments together. Be sure to check out bonus episodes, extra content, ad-free episodes, and exclusive perks at patreon.com/realitybpod and chat with me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at realitybpod. And now, let's dive right in. Hello and happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving week if you are a subscriber on Patreon and listening to this ad-free and early. I am super thankful for all of you this year, and in keeping with the Thanksgiving spirit, I am putting on a little giveaway over on Patreon. If you are a current subscriber, you are included in this. And if you would like to become a subscriber on Patreon at the $5 level, I'm going to send you a little Stay Salty keychain. I'm going to be getting them in this week, and I will personally be sending them out as soon as possible. So if you are a current subscriber or you are going to sign up, please head on over and make sure you include your mailing address. There'll be a little box that you can check that says, would you like your host or whatever they want to call me, would you like to give them your mailing address? And please check that off. I won't sell your address or anything like that because I really don't even know how to do that. I'm just going to send you some little nifty gifties. Head on over to patreon.com/realitybpod and check it out. I will also be checking out some of these new shows that you're all telling me about, the Gypsy one, perhaps the Amish one, and whatever ones we got going on. I haven't forgotten about it, but with Thanksgiving week this week, I am the host in my family and my kids being off, kind of a crazy week to start a new show. But let's dive into 90 Day Fiancé. Jay and Ashley are at this little indoor marketplace. It looked really cool, actually. I don't know if there are places like this around me. Maybe it's just a regional kind of thing. I'd be all over it if there is one. So if you live around me in the Chicagoland area, let me know. Maybe we have a little meetup. We can have some wine, some artisanal donuts. I'm sure that they can get down with some great local cheeses and charcuterie. Okay. But anyway, back to Jay. So he's looking around. He doesn't know what acorn squash are. Do you people really actually eat squash? I don't. Just eat the damn spaghetti, not the spaghetti squash. Now, the reason I bring this whole scene up, because really not a lot happens, I'll get into it, is that it reminded me of the exact same scene that we have seen with Nicole and Azen approximately three times that I can remember off the top of my head. However, it was a lot more fun to watch Nicole offending the entire nation of Morocco than it was Jay just looking around at all these other people staring right back at it. Now, the reason Jay is so uncomfortable there is because he feels like everyone is staring at him because he's black. Now, maybe I am an optimist. Maybe I just have my blinders on. I want to believe that the people there were just staring at him because they're in a crowded market. There's an entire camera crew around following them, you know, who is not going to look. However, I'm not going to discount Jay's feelings about being singled out because, let's face it, it does happen and it's not right and it has got to suck to feel that way. I love that he loves pickles, though. He just bought that jar, sat down, broke that thing open, dug in there eating the pickles as if they were a freaking meal. Like I said, I love this about Jay, just the give no fucks about pickles. But I think I'm a pickle snob. I only like refrigerated type pickles. I call them Clausen around where I live in the Midwest. I've heard that they're called Vlasic elsewhere, or maybe they're two totally different brands. But I only can get down with the must-be-refrigerated pickles. Even saying that, though, I think we should all just come together, break down our differences, realize that we all love pickles, shelf pickles, refrigerated section pickles. Come together. We are one. Drop the different types of vinegar, cloves, garlic. Do you like a sweet pickle? Do you like a bread and butter? Doesn't matter. Pickles, just like skin color, it doesn't matter. We're all human on the inside. We're all cucumbers on the inside, people. Now, we do eventually come together in what ends up being my favorite scene of the night. And if it was not your favorite scene, I don't know if we could really be friends. I am talking about G motherfucking Q Barbershop. Jay strolls in there, and so does my cold black heart. Between our random Vore, our voice of reason, never caught his name, doesn't matter because I will forever remember his face, and then who I'm just going to call Silent Bob in the background, throwing side eyes at Jay every other second. He was the guy holding up his cell phone, showing it being blown up by his wife. I was rolling. The dude in the hat, our Vore, sitting next to Jay, had those producers, I guarantee it, this is going to be really tough for me to say, but there's no other way to describe it. They had to have been jerking off by the time Jay was done getting his fade even started. These guys were reality TV gold. They're good looking. They're hilarious. They're very honest. These guys just need their own show. I don't care what it's about. It could be about the barbershop. It could be about them going to pick out what kind of pickles they want. I don't care. I would watch it. I would be the biggest fan of it. I think the most that we can hope for at this point is just another haircut scene, maybe closer to Jay's wedding day. I would love to see that Jay made friends with them and go out to a bar, maybe even have like a Molly and Luis going to the strip bar scene. Not that I want that to happen to Ashley, but let's face it, I just want to see these guys on TV. Well, darling, how about we talk about Larissa and Colt? Darlin, I cannot stand that. I hate Larissa with every fiber of my being, but I had a little twinsy moment with her when we simultaneously rolled our eyes when Colt said that to her. You gotta knock the darlin shit off. It's very 1942 old Tucson Western Saloon. It just gives me the freaking creeps. Now that made me think, do you think Colt would be into those old-timey photographs? You know, you go on vacation places and you dress up in the Western Saloon wench outfit and the gold prospector. Oh, I could totally see him getting into that. He'd probably have like a little lock in his hand because he likes lock picking. He'd be the local lock picker. But that would have come in handy for Larissa when she was in the clink, right? He could have helped her escape. But okay, back to this episode. We don't want to talk about Larissa's arrest record, do we? Or maybe we do. If you do, head on over to Sarcasm because they are all over it. They're keeping us all up to date. Okay, so Larissa wants to go get a new car with Colt. She needs to stop pretending that she came from this upper class lifestyle back in Brazil. We all know that she's a neglectful mother of at least two, maybe three children. You didn't leave anything behind in Brazil besides your kid. But nevertheless, she's persisting in telling Colty that she needs air conditioning, ASAP. I still think that Brazil story could be all bullshit because she sure as shit sounds like Teresa Giudice to me. Remember when Teresa changed her last name pronunciation after the country of Italy, all the Italians of the world called her on it? Yeah, remember that? She went all aboard the Italian Express season 2 and was forgetting her English words. Yeah, that actually happened. Don't ever forget that. I think Larissa could be some secret Italian spy. I'm just saying. Now, Larissa and Colt leave their swamp-ass soaked seats and they head into this car dealership where sweet little Jason, the car salesman, greets them. I think I may have seen Jason before on a little person show because he looked really familiar, but I cannot be totally sure of that. If you follow the little people, the little baker, the little couple, so on and so forth, let me know because fans of the little people, we stick together. Now, Cole cleverly says that he's here for, wait for it, a car. And then Larissa follows that with, I want a fancy car. You have fancy car? A blackie, a biggie, a carry, truckie, luxury. Okay, Larissa, I can see you've been practicing your English reading cult fetish porn magazines. Now, Colt is standing outside with a really new snazzy top mullet hairdo. I kind of think that Larissa might have given it to him based on the fact that we know she does hair, as evidenced by Debbie's hair on 90 Day Live last week. But maybe she is blind, okay? She gave the haircut. She gave Debbie a really bad hair color. And she's also blind to the fact that Colt does not have money to get this new car. The car is not going to happen. The couch is not going to happen. But a ring, oh, that might happen. Now, fast forward to the scene where Colt tiptoes downstairs to his mother, Debbie. Yes, tiptoes. I went back, I rewound it. And in his defense, I don't think he was trying to be quiet tiptoeing around like, you know, a child coming downstairs on Christmas morn. I think Colt is a toe walker. It happens. It's not his fault. It can be genetic. Normally, however, a PT and OT in grade school will see it. You can clear it up. But something tells me Mother Debbie probably homeschooled Colty. You know, their eyebrows match. Colt's raised inner brow ying to Debbie's spocked yang. See my Instagram or Twitter for a side-by-side. I think they get each other. I think Mother Debbie, you know, maybe she enjoys her little son tiptoeing into her heart every morning. I know Colt thinks that this is of his own free will and volition, but it's not. Debbie has done quite a number on Colt's brain and codependence. It's not healthy. And I like Debbie, but she really is to blame. You got to cut that cord. Now, all we really need to know about this scene after Colt tiptoes down is that he's going to propose to Larissa. But the real commitment factor is that they talk about adding Larissa to the joint bank account. I have never in my life wanted to be a personal banker more than I do right now. Just to be that lucky asshole that gets to sit down with the three of them, that is like winning the lotto for me. That would be the best staff meeting story ever. Or better yet, to be the waiter at the Stratosphere. Now, when Colt got out of the car wearing jeans, that damn wrinkled shirt, and gym shoes, and Larissa was in an equally bad dress, let's not give her credit here because did you really look at the outfit? She had a blazer, some sort of weird strappy dress that you know cost $11.99 and that was marked up 200%, and summer wedges. I just knew this engagement was going to be epic. One of the best of all the 90 Day Fiancé proposals. Now, first we find out that Larissa hates heights. She is terrified. Now, Colt knew this and still made the reservations there anyway. I wanted to cheer for him because, you know, we all hate Larissa. But this just goes to show how self-centered Colt is too. You think you would be very happy with your boyfriend or girlfriend if they went to propose to you and they brought you to the one place in the entire fucking state where you would absolutely shit your pants? It was all about him there, much like any of these delusional fiancés. So Larissa sits down. She refuses to drink anything. Colt orders an old fashioned because, of course, darling, he loves an old fashioned. And Colt is then holding Larissa's hand, walking around like grade schoolers being forced by like their PE teacher. They're about to do the square dancing unit and they say, oh, go grab the boy or girl's hand over there. That's the same kid who picks their nose. You got to hold their hand. It was so awkward. And then Colt tells her, I have a present for you. I could barely watch it. I was doing one of those, oh, I'm looking out the side of my eye, because it was just that awkward. There was some sort of tag hanging on the ring. Anyone catch what that said? And then Larissa just tried to swipe that thing right out of his hand. She wanted to check that shit out, probably scratch it against some glass or a mirror to make sure it was real before she actually said yes. It was bad. It was real, real bad. And then they zoom home because Colty's all excited to tell his mommy. They just barge on into Debbie's room. No care in the world. She could have been making out with one of her China dolls. They don't give a shit. I mean, you think they'd realize that if all of Debbie's laundry is hanging on the outside of her door, maybe she's got some company over. I mean, it could be threes, but she's paying for the Nick at night out of the joint account, so it's her freaking business leave her alone, or at least knock, you freaking animals. Okay, who's up next? Oh, let's talk about Jonathan and Fernanda. I hate to hear myself say this. It pains me to my core, but I agree with John. Fernanda is just too immature to understand that John dancing with someone or not dancing with someone who is not even his type is not that big of a deal. Myrtle Beach, Holly Madison is 2 decades too old for John anyway. He's not leaving you for this wannabe. Just leave it at that. Go back to the hotel. Old man Jonathan has just got a rest. He's tired. His dogs are barking. Kids these days, they just, they don't understand, right, John? They'll never understand what us older folks go through. Now, you think that this fight would be over with by the next morning, but no, it's dragging out into the next day. Fernanda is just a teenager. She's raging about something that didn't even happen. This fight to me looked like a dad trying to calm his daughter down before a big test or a big day or something. Just two different points in life, different points of view. One of them being a very young woman who's away from her family. She's going through a very intense time, an intense change, about to make a lifelong commitment. I mean, my God, I've never wanted my kids to never study abroad until now. Now, I should probably keep my kids out of the gym too, because the next scene, Fernanda is just climaxing all over the free weights. I don't buy for a second that she doesn't care that people are looking at her. No. In fact, she loves that people are looking at her, and she does not try to keep her oohs and ahs in at all. Now, John thinks this is just so hot, so cute, and for that, I think they are both massive assholes. I don't want to be hearing you two over there while I'm trying to not die over here on the rowing machine, making sure my gut doesn't accidentally press the pause button on my podcast every time I reach forward. I've got enough on my plate. All right, that's actually the very reason why I'm at the gym every damn day, because I got enough on my plate, literally, physically, emotionally, and now there's the two of you over there making your own punching bag porn. And even worse than that was when they started fighting. I could not take it. I don't care if there's a camera crew there and that's the reason that they're playing this, oh, my family doesn't know that I'm engaged to you, or they found out over social media. That bullshit, I don't care. I don't want you doing your foreplay over there. I don't want you fighting. Get the hell out of the gym. You're just that annoying couple in both of you, Fernanda and John. Stop being so fucking dramatic about everything. Now let's talk about Kalani and Asuelu. We are going to drive 6 hours to Kalani's house in Utah. Is Asuelu just every host family's wish come true? I love him and adore him. I swear he is my 8-year-old son reincarnated as a 20-something Samoan. Everything he says, I have heard it before. Is this road dangerous? How much are cars? $100? Why are you saying that word? You always say that. Now, Kalani was laughing about it too until Asuelu decided to unbuckle Oscar the Grouch. Now, granted, I would have freaked the hell out too, but I see why Asuelu did it. I'm not saying he should have done it at all, but I see why his first instinct was to remove the kid from the car seat. And to be honest, I think Kalani was just extra annoyed because she had just started digging into those delicious Cheeto Puffs. She's got a moment of peace at the wheel without the baby. Someone else has to take care of him. She's got her cheesy fingers. And, you know, we all know when you have cheesy fingers, you may as well just have amputated hands because you're rendered useless to anything except eating Cheetos at that point, right? Bleeding from the head. Oh, hold on. I got cheesy fingers. Your phone's ringing. Oh, go to voicemail. You got cheesy fingers. Doorbell rings. Cheesy fingers. Plus, no one alerted me that they're coming over. So no one move. Don't breathe. Seize all movement until the ringer has left the block or at least out of eyesight. But back to the freeway. Asuelu feels bad, and he's also mad because he didn't read, you know, thebump.com or what to expect when you're expecting or what to expect the first year. He doesn't know about U.S. car seat laws. But Kalani's pissed and stressed because she's a mother now, and her anxiety is at the level of all mothers from the moment that your child comes home. Plus, Asuelu is now pouting, so she's got a screaming, crying kid. Asuelu's sitting there pouting, giving her the silent treatment. He's even mad. It's like this horrible cycle. He's mad because he says Kalani treats him like a little boy. Well, part of that is because Asuelu is kind of like a little boy. The pouting and the putting fingers in his ears, it's not screaming, hey, talk to me like a person, like a peer, handle me like I'm a man. And the morning after, they're still at it. They're still not talking. However, I actually think that this is real life. This is most real life couples. I'm going to go couples therapist on you now. If you look at couples, normally one person is the shunner and the other person is the whatever person. Asuelu in this instance is the shunner and Kalani is the whatever person. Just think of her cheesy little hand up going, whatever. So what happens is you both cool down, you both go back to normal. It's kind of much like Colt and Mother Debbie's eyebrows, the yin to the yang. So look at your relationship. Do you tend to be the shunner or the whateverer? It's a very scientific process. I have a patent on it. Now they get to the family's house and Brother Kalani comes down. His name is Nick, but let's just call him Brother Kalani. He looks like a Hawaiian Horatio Sands. I think he was trying to be nice at first, trying to make Asuelu feel like they're bros, kind of relaxed. Says, oh, Asuelu, you need a nickname, to which Asuelu says you can call him Ace, which is weird because Asuelu is the most non-Ace person I've ever seen. And that's when things take a turn for the worse. Nick gives Asuelu this wrinkled up, warm condom from his pocket. You can tell he was really proud of this joke. He was patting himself on the back. And Asuelu, oh, I'm sorry, Ace. I'm going to keep getting confused on that one, Ace. He was just besides himself. He was very Jody circa 1992 to 1994 when I thought there was a chance that I would go into the convent. It only lasted a few months altogether over the course of a couple years, but I also was into the, not me, Lord, I am not a slut, so I understand Asuelu's prudeness. Now, this is where I kind of question Nick's motives. Was he trying to be a funny bro? Or was he trying to exert some sort of dominance, dropping some subtle passive aggressiveness? Sister Jody Catherine will leave you with this thought. I will close it with the same closing that my childhood priest would say after his homily. You can think about that a little bit. All right, let's move on to Eric and Lita, who are going to make us think a lot. Now, turns out Lita has just a touch of common sense because after seeing Eric's hoard, she took a U-turn and spent the night with her parents at that Airbnb. Now, in the flashback scene of Eric's very sad master bedroom tour, something caught my eye, as most things do. In the corner of his room, and I know this to be a fact because I paused it and zoomed in, there are a collection of very poorly made homemade wooden swords. Guys, I think Eric is a LARPer, a live-action role player. You know what those are, right? The people you see in the park playing Dungeons and Dragons. So I wasn't too far off when I made that joke last week saying Eric told Lita, my chariot awaits, m'lady, and then they went on their way to his crack den. Now, I know many of you reached out to me last night when I tweeted something about this and said, oh, it's because Lita is a cosplayer into cosplay. Well, I looked up her costumes and she's more of a metallic fan. So I really do think that the wooden swords are Eric's. I don't think Lita would have brought such poor quality wooden swords, paid the extra baggage fee to haul those things all the way from Indonesia. I'm sticking to my story. I'm sticking to my gut feeling. Eric is a LARPer. Okay, so what's weird to me, Lita keeps saying that her family is just so worried about her that they have such high expectations and they don't want her to stay here in the States with Eric. But her parents did not seem that overly concerned about Lita's living in that apartment. I mean, yeah, they said it was dirty and it was small, But I really honestly think they are just as annoyed with Lita as all of us are. As long as Alessandro isn't going to be sleeping atop Eric's shoulders, I think they're all good. Just get rid of Lita, then they can go back to NYC, baby, party it up. They don't give a fuck about Lita. The only thing that really did shock me was that family Lita was sitting on the furniture in that apartment. Ew. I mean, they even touched the walls and the door handles. Ooh. I didn't even touch my own home's doors and walls after we moved in until I cleaned every switch, every baseboard, every railing, painted every surface in here. Maybe since Lita's dad is a doctor, packed some antibiotics for everyone. Who knows? But the fact that they were just rocking away, you know, opening up the screen door, sitting on every surface. Oh, God, I was so disgusted and shocked. Now, later, Eric comes back to the Airbnb after work. He's now got to sit down with the whole family and just take on the weight of the world from them. He looks like he's about to fall asleep. Looks like he's aged at least another 10 years since yesterday. And it's about to get even worse because they're all there to say that the apartment is gross. They want Lita and the kid to fly back to Indonesia with them. But Lita says she's not going. This is where her father skipped, oh, maybe like 2-3 beats and did not fight back. He was like, oh, okay, well then do you want a month or two rent? We'll take the kid back. How does that sound? I'm telling you, they want nothing to do with Lita. They can't get rid of her quick enough. I have to give Eric a little thumbs up here because he didn't take the offer to take the money. I don't want to give him a complete attaboy yet because the season isn't over. There's still a chance that he's going to take that handout. I actually did see an update from TLC. They were tweeting and they said that they were supposed to be closing on a house within that time period that the family was there. That's why they were still in that apartment. Do we believe it? I don't know until I see it. Now, Lita. She can go take a flying fucking leap because she is just about the worst stepmother ever. She hasn't even met Eric's daughter, Tasha, yet, and she's saying that she already hates her. Real nice Dr. Lita, you know, taking the oath, do no harm. What a fucking bitch. This is where you can see her family making eyes at one another with a, oh God, this is Lita, here she goes again. I'm telling you, they cannot wait to get her off their hands. They're willing to pay Eric, if you look at it that way. Okay, let's talk about Steven and Olga. Oh my God, I love this girl and I fucking hate Steven. So apparently Olga is giving birth to little Steven at a baby store. I legit saw the logo for Gerber Baby Products on the sign on the outside. And if you need a visual outside of a hospital to let people know what's going on in there, I think that you just need a pass. Do your own home birth. I'm that serious about it. I'm not a big proponent for home births. Hey, if it works for you, don't hate me. For myself, I just want to see things beeping. I want all the drugs. Now, Stephen reminds us that Olga needs to have a C-section because the doctor had this thing to do tonight. So he's just going to, you know, bring it in for a landing, wrap it up. So down the hall they go into the onomatopoeia room where Olga is laying there. She's all spread out. I know that they were zooming in on the incision as it was happening, but my eyes were all over that black mold creeping up the tile surrounding the room. Just thousands of grout lines brimming with probably the entire Russian DNA ancestry database. I mean, you could probably go back to, what was it, the Tsar of Russia, Anastasia. I'm probably getting all my history mixed up. What I'm trying to say is it was fucking disgusting. Now, the baby is finally born, apparently with great lungs because he's crying despite the millions of mold spores flying around in there. Better save up for a nebulizer, Steven. Now, this is where Steven starts his monologue. He's leaning over in Olga's ear and he starts saying, I'm so happy. Like, you don't even understand how happy I am right now. He's whispering this to Olga, the woman who has done this whole pregnancy on her own, has never had a family on her own, labored in a bra in front of an entire camera crew, and then gave birth at the hospital located in an old Babies R Us. Trust me, Steve, she's happy too. She understands. Now, the next time we see Steven is into the second hour of the show. Now, Russian baby stores don't let you visit for more than an hour, so he hasn't been able to spend much time with Olga or baby Richie. He wants Olga and the baby to go back to her apartment immediately. Now, once again, I'm going to defer to TLC tweeting during the show here. I saw that they had tweeted that in Russia, the babies and the moms don't even spend that much time together. So Olga did not spend much more time with Richie than Steven did. So Steven comes to the hospital, storms into her room, rinses his hands, and then dries them off on his shirt, and then proceeds to just rub his hands all over Richie's face. I didn't think Olga was being rude or bossy to him at all. In fact, I think Steven was being one of the biggest assholes we've ever seen on this show. This is absolutely something that Andre is going to be doing with Elizabeth. He's yelling at Olga, get dressed. I said, get dressed now. He's huffing and puffing, walking all over the place like he has just been so put out by her taking her damn sweet time at the hospital. You know, you asshole. She just had major surgery and she's feeding her baby. It's not about you, Steven. This is about the baby. And right now, Olga is the primary parent because she's the food source. She's the comfort source. And for someone who seems to think that he knows all about babies, Steven should know that. And then, oh my God, when he yelled at her to go and pack her own shit because she was supposedly being the asshole to him. And then he calls her as she's packing her stuff up, doing as she's told. He's like, Olga, go, Olga, hurry up, come feed the baby. The baby's hungry. Well, yeah, she was just feeding the baby before you barked at her to get moving. Now, I don't know if they ever make it to the States. I feel like in the very beginning of the season, they showed her here in the United States and that Steven was threatening her that he would keep the baby here. I really hope that if they come here, she doesn't feel like she's trapped. That's a Dateline episode just waiting to happen. All right, well, next time on 90 Day Fiancé, we see that Jay starts texting old friends. Lita tries to kick Tasha out, and Asuelu tries to throw the baby in the air like one of his little Hawaiian fire sticks. Now, before I wrap it up today, I just want to wish you once again a very happy Thanksgiving. I am incredibly thankful for this past year, growing reality TV, meeting so many of you, and especially subscribers to Patreon. There is no way I could maintain this podcast weekly episodes without you. Remember that if you join, you still get all those perks of the $5 a month level, including over 50 bonus episodes at this point. And for that limited time until December 15th, I will be personally sending out some Stay Salty keychains. Now, if you can't swing Patreon, please leave a 5-star review and check out my other podcast, Moms on the Rocks. This week, we're talking about how my kids were major assholes to me this week. And, you know, I got some karma right under my own roof. What can I say? Parenting in its finest moments. And once again, happy Thanksgiving. No guilt this week. Don't apologize. Eat, drink, be merry, and stay salty. Last thing before I let you go eat your turkey, I want to remind you about a great podcast that you should be checking out called Girls Girls. It's a podcast produced by best friends Brittany Gibbons and Meredith Solo that highlights their adventures fumbling through adulthood like bosses. Every week they gather a bestie or two to chat about life, sex, pop culture, and all manner of womanhood in the most hilarious, honest, and sometimes explicit of terms. You may know Brittany Gibbons as the author of the blog Brittany Herself and the author of her hilarious memoir, Fat Girl Walking, a New York Times bestseller. Meredith Solo is a stand-up comedian, humor blogger, and social media agency owner. She's been on Katie Couric and 2020. These ladies are sure to make you laugh, so settle in, grab a glass of wine, maybe some leftovers, and check them out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. That's the Girls Girls Podcast.